I thought this was gonna be another flop. I can't.
It was gonna be last week again. We were having issues starting the recording this week. Yay!
Like, we did everything right, and yet things just weren't working because that's
no
on brand.
It's on brand, and you want to know what happened with our Anchor account?
Let's not talk about it.
Let's not talk about it. User error. We'll just leave it at that. Embarrassing user error.
I just have no words.
We forgot how to do everything.
Yeah. So we're just
in our little break.
We're just starting fresh, starting new. And
we are.
And we're gonna try to keep it to minimal errors now.
Yes.
But
I
hey,
hope so.
Everyone, I'm
Julie.
Hi.
I'm Kat.
And this is Miss Murder.
Miss Murder. Cue the music.
Do-do-do.
I like that.
Yeah.
And you know who we need to shout out?
Who do we need to shout out?
Your squad.
You're frozen. What the fuck? What is happening? Why?
It's freezing. Why is it freezing?
It's freezing.
Oh my god.
Okay. Hello. I think
we're fine. Hello. On brand.
I'm not emotionally strong enough for this.
No.
Okay.
This is something
so
we look
we
forward
need
to.
Shout out?
We need to shout out your squad.
Oh my god. We do.
I was scrolling through our Google Doc and I was like, oh my god, we never gave the shout out. And apparently we were supposed to give Asia the rights to our death stories.
Yes.
Yes.
I thought we had the right to Asia's death story.
Oh, that must be what it was. Mm-hmm. I was scrolling through the Google Doc and there was a comment and I was like, oh, we never mentioned this.
Yeah. Shout out to squad. Yeah, Sheila literally texted me the other day and she was like, I'm still here waiting for the shout out. And I was like, damn, I thought you would have forgot by now, but 2023
episodes. Who could forget a shout
out
on Miss Murder?
23? Is this our 23rd episode?
24? I think it's
24. 24th episode.
I don't know. I don't keep count.
And
I just title it by the person we're talking about.
Yeah. 24 episodes in and you got your shout out to squad for being supportive and there
from
for
day
me,
one.
From day one and for putting up with me. I appreciate y'all.
Yes.
I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for y'all, Sheila specifically. Because Halloween 2K14.
Oh, that was an iconic year. That was my Halloween 2K17.
That was. Oh, Catherine. Halloween 2K17.
Oh, Julie.
Oh,
2K14.
We were wild in college.
Y'all were wild.
Okay. Yeah. We were wildin'.
Y'all were wild in that night.
But we're alive and we're here and that's what really matters.
So thank you, Sheila, for making Miss Murder possible.
Thank you. I owe you my life. But yes, we're here. We're here. We're back.
I'm ready for the shitstorm that we're about to go through. I had some apple pie moonshine.
Oh my.
Which, she's true Southerner right here.
And let me tell you, we got a Southern case tonight.
Oh,
we got a Southern case.
How appropriate.
Oh, yes. It's like you read my mind.
Oh, because I did not read. So, like, Julie sent me, like, screenshots of how wild this was by all the tabs that she had opened during her research. And I didn't read the only thing that I saw was the word captain. And I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
This is going to be good.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, we got a little bit of a whodunit. Which I don't normally do, you know that.
That's normally mine.
But we got a little bit of a whodunit. We got a little bit of a forensics heavy case.
Ooh. which is also right up your alley, also as right that undergrad degree in biology.
With a minor in forensics. So, you know, I'm in my bag. Okay. I'm really excited about this case because...
Oh, I'm so pumped for this. I made, you can see my neck is already, like, it's already breaking red. Out in red for excitement.
Literally...
I just naturally turn red over anything.
Any and all emotions, Catherine,
like if
will turn red.
When aliens decide to make contact with us when they've had enough of their shit, I'm going to be abducted, and they're going to put me on display in their little alien museum, and they're going to say that on planet Earth, Homo sapiens de Caucasian turned red as a defense mechanism against other animal species. I will be that example.
They're going to put you in, like, in a red box, and then they're just gonna have you camouflage. They're gonna have the tourists come in and say something to you.
All the little alien children are gonna yell their alien insults at me.
They're gonna bully you.
I'm gonna get bullied by aliens.
You're gonna get bullied by aliens, and then you're just gonna camouflage with your background.
Yes.
And you know what? I would pay. I would pay to see that.
I would pay to see. I would pay my. I would hope I get paid for this.
You're not going to get paid for this.
I'm not going to get paid. That's just being optimistic. Yeah. I'm going to be exploited, yes.
It's finally the white man's turn to be exploited.
Exploited by aliens.
You know what? It's on brand.
It's the circle of life. Yes. And it keeps on turning.
That's not right.
Is that the word?
That's not.
Okay. I didn't think that was right. I was a little too confident there.
But you know what? We'll give it to you because you've been drinking moonshine. Okay.
Thank you.
So, tonight, we're going to be talking about the case of Jeffrey McDonald. Do you know about this case?
I do not.
All right. Wonderful.
Are we going to hate Jeff?
Oh, we're going to fucking hate Jeff with a burning passion in our souls. Okay?
Ooh.
So for this, most of my research came from a docuseries called A Wilderness of Error. It's on Hulu.
Oh.
It's 5 episodes. It's excellent.
I'm gonna have to watch
that. It's excellent. I made Andy sit with me and watch it, and we binged it in, like, one night.
So, as you should.
Yes. So, like I said, this week I'm going to take y'all down to Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Fort Bragg, North Carolina?
That's right. This is
We got a North Carolinian case?
This is a local homegrown case.
Oh,
so
bless your heart,
bless my little heart, and bless your heart for what you're about to listen to. My accent's really awful.
No, see, your accent has improved over the years.
Thank
though.
You.
It has Thank improved you. Over the years.
It's because I'm
especially...
American now. I'm American now. Like the day that
You've
I
been Americanized.
Swore, the day that I swore in to become a naturalized American citizen, I just felt the.
You felt the fluency
felt
of
the
South.
The spirit of the South just washed through me as the military planes did a flyover in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Praise the Lord.
The first in flight, the site of the first aviation, we, you know? Anyway.
First in flight, first in sight.
That's right.
God bless.
God bless America.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly what it says on our state license plate, though.
Yeah, it is. I think so.
I think verbatim, first in flight, God bless.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah.
The South.
The South.
And so, we're wildin'. Just like Jeffrey McDonald was definitely wildin' in 1970. Ooh. Okay.
Oh.
So let me tell you a little bit about Mr. Jeffrey McDonald, okay?
I feel like he would get bullied with that name. Just something about that.
Maybe. But no, maybe, okay, I feel like Jeffrey was bullied as a child, but then had, like, some sort of, like, villain origin story and decided, so he became kind of hot and then decided to go.
Oh, he got an ego.
Yeah, he got an ego. He decided to become a doctor. He joined the military, became a Green Beret. Do you hear Sirius?
Sirius doesn't like this.
Sirius doesn't like Jeffrey. He said, fuck Jeffrey. So.
If a dog doesn't like Jeffrey,
that's how you know.
That's a bad sign.
That's a bad sign. So
it's a bad omen.
Yeah. So he became a doctor. He was a military doctor. He became a Green Beret, you know, which is like a very special honor in the military, like a very specialized task force type of deal. He came up special. To be the rank of captain. So he was Captain Jeffrey McDonald.
Oh, like Captain, no, Dr. Captain Jeffrey McDonald.
No, literally. Literally Dr. Captain. Literally Dr. Wow. Captain. Like a title. And so I feel like it just that inflated his ego a little bit too much.
That really would.
And
I feel like if I had the title Captain Doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, nobody.
Nobody would be able
nobody
to tell me
can talk to me.
Exactly.
Nobody can tell me anything about anything. Why? Because I'm a doctor
and
I'm a captain.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we see happened with little Jeffrey here. Because little Jeffrey, he grew up in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which is in Fayetteville.
He's a local boy.
Local boy. And he went to middle school with the woman he eventually married, named Colette.
That's kind of sweet.
So
but
they like knew each other through middle school, dated through high school, and then she ended up getting pregnant in her early 20s, and so they got married.
You gotta marry the girl. You gotta marry the girl. Southern code.
Exactly. So they the McDonald's. You had Colette. You had Jeffrey. And you had two little daughters, Kimberly and Kristen. Kimberly was 5 and Kristen was 2. And
if you're telling me their ages, this is a red flag. This is a red flag if I know their ages.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And so they lived on base at Fort Bragg because, like I said, he was a doctor. He not only worked on treating, you know, like the soldiers on the base, but also like the Fayetteville area, like since
Fort
Bragg is,
okay,
like,
so he was like a GP for the army and civilians,
right,
sort of thing.
Exactly. So, you know, he had quite a bit of, you know, he had quite a bit going for him. He was like the tail of the all-American boy. He was like a high school football player. He was very charming, and he became hot. Like,
I bet you Jeffrey had a pickup truck with a red flag, and then on Friday nights they would meet in the Walmart parking lot and do donuts in the cornfields.
I feel like he
was. I don't
wasn't
know if Fayetteville has cornfields. Oh, he wasn't one of those.
I feel like he
okay,
was like
I misread
one of
the
like,
vibe.
You yeah, and more like a preppy like
oh,
like preppy Southern.
Okay,
like
the
Vineyard
preppy
Vines,
all-American. Ooh!
Like Vineyard Vines, fucking Chubbies,
oh,
one of those.
Oh.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
is
yeah.
I don't know which one's worse.
Yeah, they're both.
The redneck one or the prep one? I mean, both fit the all-American.
Yeah.
In the South, we have two types of all-American boys. The Salt Life and the Vineyard Vines.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's it.
And they both can go terribly, terribly wrong.
Very much so. Please beware if your man has a Salt Life bumper sticker
yes.
on his car.
Yes, exactly. Oof. No, thank you.
That's just Southern wisdom.
Southern wisdom from Kat and Julie. Okay, so on the morning of February 17th, 1970, at around 3 a.m., the military police gets a call for a disturbance and a possible stabbing in a home nearby.
Possible stabbing?
Yeah.
How... You know, because if it's a possible shooting, you know, you would
hear,
some kind of
yeah.
echo. How does a possible
oh, be, okay, so
work?
Let me tell you how they knew. Because
okay, tell
Mr.
Me, tell me.
Jeffrey McDonald himself called it in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fucking Captain Dr. McDonald knows what's going on.
Oh, yes. So when the police arrive, they get to the house at 544 Castle Street, I believe was the address. And they try to get in through the front door, but it's locked. So they try to go around back, and the back door is ajar.
It's ajar.
Open. So they're able to go in through the back. And what do they find when they walk in?
They find the wife they and the kids. They find
two bodies, two adult bodies, one male and one female, laying on the ground in their master bedroom with blood spattered all around them. There was blood on the ceilings. There was blood on the walls, on the floor, on the bed. It was just everywhere. Like,
that is
massive amounts of blood splattered everywhere.
You gotta be so aggressive.
Yep.
That is so much anger. Yeah. I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not gonna diagnose anybody. But to have that much splatter in a stabbing, person has to be angry. Yeah. They have to be
also
strong.
It kind of indicates that it maybe wasn't just a stabbing if it's that much splatter.
Had to be some sort of beatings or something.
Based on my forensic knowledge, that type of explosive splatter typically happens with a blunt force, high intensity. I'm making a hitting motion. You can't see, but just letting you know. Okay. So they go to the two bodies and they start to examine. The male body is like laid face down sort of on top of the female body. So they
almost like he was protecting her.
Almost like he was protecting her. So they start to move the bodies around and they notice that the male body is alive. The male is alive and he starts kind of coming to. And they start to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and the male wakes up and says, "Go check on my kids. They got my kids."
No.
So at this point, they realize that the woman has been stabbed multiple times all over her chest and torso, and that she is definitely not alive. So they go and go to the other rooms in the house to try to go check on the kids, like the male said. So when they go into the two rooms of the young girls, Kimberly and Kristen, they find that both of them are dead in their rooms, surrounded by puddles of blood.
Oh my God.
So now you have this lone survivor that was identified as Captain Dr. Jeffrey McDonald. And of course, he was rushed to the hospital. And this is where things get a little iffy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
tell us more.
Obviously, the woman was identified as Jeffrey's wife, Colette. And like I said, she had been stabbed multiple times in the neck and chest. Both her arms were broken.
Oh my God.
And it was discovered that she was pregnant.
No.
Yep.
The oldest daughter, Captain.
Yeah, the oldest daughter, Kimberly, had also been stabbed multiple times and had a blunt object wound to the head that had depressed her skull like 3 centimeters.
Oh my God.
Yep.
That's a child.
Yep. She was 5. And the 2-year-old, little Kristen, she had also been stabbed multiple times and actually had defensive wounds on her hands, like on her hands that they determined were defensive wounds. So she was definitely awake and conscious when she was attacked.
That is fucking horrific. Yeah. A 2-year-old.
Yep. So once Dr. Captain Jeffrey is rushed to the hospital and the investigators are at the scene, you know, looking around to try to find a murder weapon and try to just, you know, get a feel for what's going on here. And so they find a club. Well, it was like a large wooden plank, a knife, and an ice pick. So this is what they believed.
Oh my God. Like
the combination of the three were the murder weapons.
Yeah.
Some other things that were kind of odd and were also found was there was like a blue shirt that was laid across the woman's body, like a pajama shirt that was blue and it was just like laid across the woman's body. So if you can kind of
cover her up.
So if you can kind of picture it, like the Colette was laid face up, like laid down on the ground. Then she had like a blue shirt kind of laid across her chest. And then Jeffrey was laid face down on top of her, like on top of this blue shirt. Like a sandwich. Okay,
so like the blue shirt, yeah, was just kind of thrown over her just to like cover her. Okay.
You'll see. The blue shirt comes back. Because it was definitely an odd position for it to just kind of be there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's people that will, like, try to dress bodies.
Yes, because it's supposed to be, like...
If hypothetically, if some random man broke into your house, murdered your two children, blood splatter all over the place, I don't think this man... through all this stabbing is like, you know what? I want to make her, you know, because there are psychopaths out there doing that, but based on this blood splatter, I don't think he was the type of guy to take the time and say, hey,
you know what? I'm going to cover
you. Know what?
You.
We're
going to
make her look a little fashionable for the police. Yeah. We're going to get this blue, the pop of blue with the red.
No.
I'm not getting fashion runway vibes. Yeah.
Also, that type of like, covering up your victim's body typically happens with like a sexual assault case because it's supposed to be like giving some sort of like modesty back to the victims after the assault.
Yeah, it's almost.
But there wasn't that. There was no assault, no sexual assault.
Yeah.
So another thing that was kind of weird that they found was that the word pig was written on the headboard of the bed in blood.
If you're echoing the Manson family,
ding, ding,
what kind
ding.
Of fucking person?
Ding, ding, fucking.
Because what is it? This you
ding.
Said this was in this was in the '70s.
This was February 1970.
Hold on, let me look at the exact.
Yes, they were. The Manson family was arrested in December of 1969. That you're skipping ahead. This is all part of the. This is all part of the.
Oh, I am on it. I am on this. It's the moonshine.
Your wrinkles are working.
I am thinking things. Exactly. I am riddling it all together. Thank you, Apple Pie Moonshine. I don't remember the brand, but you're delicious.
It's delicious. The fact that you gave it a kiss.
Well, I gave a kiss to the microphone. I'm just holding my empty glass. Don't judge my empty glass. It's like a cute little...
It is cute. It's like a crystal looking...
Yeah, it's like a coin collection. Mm. Or like there's like little... I guess the closest thing would be like resin. There's like resin coins all around.
Like imprints.
So...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know where my mom got it from, but we have like a whole... Like there's a pitcher, there's these glasses.
Fuck.
It's like a whole... thing.
Yeah, they look
so
fancy as fuck,
I figured it's a reasonable glass for moonshine.
Very much. Very much the right the right heirs or whatever.
But
so,
Manson. I mean, that definitely plays into the hysteria though.
Oh yeah.
Because everybody was on fucking edge after Manson.
Exactly.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. You tell the story.
So do you want to hear what Jeffrey's story was? After they found all of this.
What did Captain Dr. Jeffrey McDonald have to say about this?
Yeah, so...
What did this man have to say about his family's slaughter?
Yeah, so when the doctor examines him at the hospital, he notices that he just has some, like, very minor scrapes to his abdomen and chest, very small, shallow, non-life-threatening puncture wounds, and he didn't really seem to be in any distress.
That doesn't.
So this is what he said happened. So this is what he said happened. Jeffrey says that he was in the living room listening to a record, smoking a cigar, but he dozed off and Colette went to bed. So, you know, he's passed out in the living room, but then he was startled awake by his wife screaming his name. She was screaming, Jeff, why are they doing this to me? And this is where he wakes up and sees that two white males, a black man in an army jacket, and a woman with long blonde hair wearing a white floppy hat and white boots had broken into their house.
Wait. Wait.
Yeah.
What?
Very specific. A woman with long blonde hair wearing a white floppy hat and white boots.
Why would you? Okay. I get that he's going for the whole Manson family vibe of this group of people broke into our house. But I think of Deadpool. You know why?
Why?
Deadpool wears red so you can't see him bleed.
Right.
Why would you want to ruin your white floppy hat, your nice white boots, and a very bloody homicide?
Yeah. It'd make no sense. But it played into
That's not what most people think about when committing a horrible murder. But, like...
But, you know, they were hitting...
If you're gonna lie, at least be good at it.
He was like, they're hippies. Hippies wear white floppy hats.
So, of course.
Yeah.
Look at Woodstock. All of those fucking floppy hats. All the Hollywood. All those Manson girls wearing their floppy hats.
Yeah, so... Jeff continues his story, and he's like, the woman with the floppy hat had, like, a lit candle, and she kept...
What?
And she kept saying, acid is groovy, kill all the pigs.
My camera fell! Oh my god, my camera fell. I thought that was so funny. I hit, like...
Yeah, that was my thought exactly. It was like, oh yes.
What?
The hippie is going around the house just saying, acid is groovy, kill all the pigs.
Right, is that supposed to be, like, a satanic chant?
Yeah.
Acid is groovy.
Also, like, you're still frozen. Your camera has not come
back. Yeah, I plugged in my camera.
Okay, minor.
Okay, we're back. I was so Wow.
It was a violent reaction. It was violent.
So I don't really have a stable setup for my camera. So my camera kind of fell, and then I tried to get it back again, and then I was frozen, and then I unplugged it and plugged it back in again, and then it cut out the audio, and now we're back.
So
what a time.
Oh yeah, it's quite the case. So yeah, so we've got fucking long blonde hair, white floppy hat wearing bitch yelling acid is groovy all around the house and saying to kill all the pigs.
This is just like Walmart Manson.
May I pose a question?
Please pose a question.
They're saying kill all the pigs. They wrote the word pig in blood, but they didn't even kill the pig. They didn't even barely touch the pig. The pig being Jeffrey, because he is military.
You're making it seems a very unlikely. Solid point.
It seems unlikely to me.
The man in this case, I was thinking he was at least going to try to have maybe like, this man's a doctor. He's a doctor captain. He knows anatomy. Exactly. He would know where to stab himself and survive.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Like, he would know what areas to avoid, major arteries. But this man was too chicken shit to do it.
Exactly.
You're going to fucking murder your entire family and you're too chicken shit to, like, stab yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Acid is groovy,
kill all the pigs, yet the pig was not killed. And so when they do his CID interview, which is the chronological in-depth structured interview, which is just like, you know, he's supposed to be running through the chronological.
Oh, yeah. Tell us what happened sort of thing.
So, you know, obviously he said all the part about, you know, four people broke in. They were hippies. They were ritualistically murdering them. They were like Manson knockoffs or whatever.
Yeah.
So this is when Jeff says that he was trying to defend and fight for his wife, you know. So he's trying to fight off one of the guys, but somehow his blue pajama shirt got pulled over his head.
What?
And was like stuck on his wrist while he was trying to struggle against the guy. And that because he was, like, stuck with his pajama shirt on his wrist, that he didn't really have a chance to defend himself. And this is when he sees the guy that he's fighting against pull out a knife, and he didn't get to defend himself, and then he blacks out.
Okay, but I raise you this. This man is a captain.
Yes.
Is this not what he has been trained?
Yes.
In combat for?
Yes.
You are a captain. Was he?
You're
in the
a green
army?
Beret. He's a.
You're
green
a
beret.
Green beret. And you're stopped by a pajama top?
Yeah. So much so that he just blacked out.
All of this, that must have, oh, so embarrassing. I'm a green beret and I'm so embarrassed by this simple pajama top blocking and inhibiting all my years of training. I'm going to black out from embarrassment.
Exactly.
What a guy.
And so clearly he's blacked out. The guy has the knife, supposedly stabs him, but, you know, not deep enough to actually cause any type of
because the Mansons injuries. they were not playing willy-nilly when it came to stabbing. So
they,
if this
into the
group
stabs.
Of hippies saw an unconscious green beret captain doctor,
they would have gone to town.
They're gonna take advantage of that. They're gonna,
yeah, but they didn't.
They did it because acid is groovy.
Acid is groovy. So McDonald then says that the next thing he remembers is waking up on the hallway floor and going to the bedroom to find his wife dead next to the bed. And he said this is when he tried to give her mouth to mouth, but he noticed that the air was coming out through her chest. He was giving her mouth to mouth, and the air that he was breathing into her was coming out through her chest.
Oh my God.
At this point, he goes to the phone. He calls 911 for a doctor and an ambulance, and then goes to check his daughter's pulses and notices that they are also dead. After this, he's like, man, I don't think that that calling the 911 operator was, like, urgent enough. So I have to try to now call the military base to try to get somebody in the military police to come, like, ASAP.
Yeah.
So he goes to the kitchen. He picks up the phone and calls the military base and gets a sergeant on the phone. So this is when he says, once again, that he needs an ambulance and a doctor because, and I quote, some people have been stabbed and he thought he was going to die.
Some people doesn't mean my high school, middle school sweetheart. Some people doesn't mean my 5-year-old daughter and my 2-year-old daughter. Some people is what you use for strangers, like people that you have no knowledge or any emotional relationship with.
Exactly. So homeboy was sus from the start.
Oh,
and
fuck
so,
this guy.
But because, you know, the Manson family had just been arrested like 2 months before. And, you know, obviously like the satanic panic and like,
he described
that there was like some odd cult like ritualistic elements to these brutal attacks. Exactly. The candle,
like a candle.
Acid is groovy. That's it.
I must therefore be satanic because I have my blue lavender candle that Julie got me for my birthday.
I did.
Satanists support other Satanists.
Yes. So because this was clearly like very sensationalized.
Yeah.
The entire like Fayetteville area went into a panic. So, like, local gun permits in the area soared. Ooh. Like, people were, you know, afraid, like, sleeping with knives and stuff.
Yeah, because, like, all that Manson stuff, it's like it finally made its way to the East Coast. Because East Coast was kind of protected, I guess.
Yeah, it was only in California, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, or, like, the actual Manson family. So they just thought this was, like, Manson copycats, pretty much. And so the police, you know, began targeting and arresting, like, pretty much any and all hippies, quote unquote hippies, that remotely matched the description that Captain McDonald had given. So because Fort Bragg had a military base and it was in Fayetteville after the war, after Vietnam, they called Fayetteville.
Fayetteville?
They called Fayetteville Fayetnam.
Oh.
So you had lots of...
I did not know that.
Yeah, you had lots of, like, army vets who came back with PTSD and had, like, really bad drug addiction. There was very bad, like, heroin problem on the streets. And there was, like, one particular area that was, like, where all the hippies and drug addicts would, like, go to hang out. So this is when they just started, like, arresting pretty much everybody. And then the day after the murder, an officer named Prince Beasley said that he knows a woman who hangs out in that drug area who matches the description that McDonald gave.
Okay, but I feel like I feel literally anybody could match that description. In the 70s.
So, like, this is, like, an actual person. So this is the whole whodunit of this case, is that you're, like, his story seems so ridiculous and fabricated.
Yeah, and it's, and the descriptions was, like, are so vague.
Yeah, but there was, like, actually someone. So that's the whole, like, whodunit of this case, is that there was the potential of there actually being someone who was wearing a long blonde wig with a white floppy hat and white boots that confessed to doing it.
I don't think we should take confessed as being typed in bold.
Yes,
I feel like that should be more in quotations. Italics.
So this officer, Prince Beasley, he stakes out this woman's house named Helena Stokely. So, Helena Stokely was a drug addict that hung out in that area and was known to wear a long blonde wig with a white floppy hat and white boots.
Oh, this man just, like, okay, this is, like, what's that movie? Usual Suspects? Have you ever seen that? Yeah. And he's just, like, going around the room. And he's, like, basically bullshitting this story based on the officer's things. Yeah. If he's a doctor in the community, he's more than likely treated these people. So he's like, hey, you know
Remember this patient?
This is what this man has done.
You are just jumping ahead.
Because of moonshine. I am connecting dots.
Yes. So pretty much... he stakes out her house. She comes home at, like, 2:30 that day. And he, like, goes up to her and pretty much asks her, you know, are you on drugs? She says yes. Duh. And he asks.
That's not funny, but it's funny.
He tells her that there's been a murder on the base and that, and was she involved? Like, was she there? And Helena says she was there.
She said, fuck you, involved. Of course I was there.
And
So the
whole thing is that it turns out that Jeffrey, as a doctor, was very prejudiced against drug addicts, especially, like, heroin addicts. So he had put forth this policy in Fayetteville that pretty much would have people, like, if they wanted to seek medical attention from him, that they would have to be forced to show their arms, their forearms, and if they had any signs of track marks, that he wouldn't treat them.
But doesn't that pretty much go against the ethical oath of doctors?
I honestly don't think Jeffrey had a single ethical bone in his body.
I mean, he probably wore vineyard vines in the 70s. So we're just already scratching that when he's, what, 18?
Yeah. So I guess because of this, you know, prejudice policy, there was essentially, like, a group cult of these drug addicts that were pissed.
And
and they got together. So this is, like, Helena's story.
Helena's story is
that this group of drug addicts were pissed that, you know, he was discriminating against them and wasn't giving them medical attention. So the plan was to go to his house and just, like, scare him a little bit.
with our.
They said that they were gonna just scare him and have him like retract the policy, and that if he didn't comply, that they would take care of it.
Ooh.
And when they asked her in the interview, like, what does that mean? And she was like, it was implied that we knew what take care of it meant. So now you're like, oh, damn. So maybe.
So there really maybe was, there was some truth. A group of Southern hippies with a vendetta against Dr. Captain Jeffrey McDonald.
Oh, yeah. So. Obviously, the police is like investigating into this, looking into Helena, looking into her neighbors and people who knew her. And I mean, she was definitely somebody that was very known in the community. And it turns out she was actually an informant for the police about like a drug informant for the police. Oh. And she had a very close relationship with Officer Beasley.
Oh, a close relationship.
Her old roommate at the time said that she would pretty much do anything for him. Do anything, say anything.
Oh. That is a conflict.
A little bit.
Of this story.
But at the time, they didn't know this, obviously.
Yeah.
But they, hindsight. You know, right. So they're still looking into Helena. But while this is happening, the investigators went back to the house to try to, you know, piece what happened that night. And the more that they investigated, one thing became very, very obvious.
And what was that?
That whoever committed these murders did not break in or come from outside the house. The murderer had to have come from within the house. Making it's Jeffrey McDonald the inside. Only person who could have possibly committed these crimes.
What was that movie? There's a horror movie from the 80s. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like one of the movies I'll definitely show you. Yeah. But like this girl calls 911 and she's like, this person keeps calling, like threatening, like the kids are sleeping there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, it's from inside the house.
Yeah. Yep.
The murder's from inside the house.
Oh, yeah. So,
he has a MD or a DO, like, he obviously is book smart.
Right.
So, I guess he didn't even,
he
like,
was not
try?
Common sense smart.
Yeah, like, did he not even, I mean, he also, like, just threw the blue pajama top on her. I don't think he really thought about supporting the break-in story. You know, he could have tried.
So much deeper. Just wait. Oh. Just wait. It just goes so much deeper. It's just ridiculous. So, let me tell you where the forensics comes in. The irrefutable fucking physical evidence that was found at this place.
I'm ready.
Number one. The most like weak circumstantial evidence is that that night of February 16th and 17th going into that morning, it was raining heavily.
Ooh.
And guess what? There was not in the house at all. Mud. Foot
was
tracks.
There not mud? Were there no,
no
wet,
mud,
wet pieces
no foot
of
tracks,
clothing?
No
water puddles?
Wet, no water, nothing. No indication at all that anybody had come from outside on a rainy night.
You know, I was None. Also thinking, you know, like breaking glass or something. But even if he tried that, I mean, he would probably do it the wrong way, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Next. F for effort.
F for effort. True. Mm-hmm. That's the ABCs of crime this week. F for effort. F for effort. Hold it. Save it.
Oh, I'll save it.
The next piece of, I mean, just like fucking, this is where you're like, he really didn't think about shit, is the blood evidence. In the house.
Mm.
So Jeff was type B blood. Colette was type A blood. Kimberly had type AB blood. And Kristen had type O blood. So when investigators started running, investigating the house, it was like super easy to see the movements of the people in the house.
Yeah.
And there was only those four types of blood in the house. So, in the interview that Jeff gave to the police, he claimed that he had been attacked in the living room. Yet there was no blood in the living room.
I mean, no that probably blood
in the living
yeah,
room.
Yeah, like there probably wasn't even a flipped over chair, you know, like just anything. It probably
just, you are just so there.
Like it probably looked like an open house to these realtors coming in. Oh, and here you'll see the living room, and we have the kitchen with a nice view of Fort Bragg.
So, now that you mentioned that, the next piece of evidence is that this was a small house on the base, and the living room and the dining room were like less than 6 feet away from each other.
Oh, so
and
real close,
this supposedly very violent struggle happened in the living room. So there was one overturned coffee table that was laying on its side, not on its top, which when the investigators like recreated the scene, every time that there was any force put on that table to be flipped, it would always flip on its top, not on its
and
side.
And didn't you say,
and it was
like,
on top of some magazines.
He got pushed through the coffee table? Or like there was some sort of scuffle that made him.
Yes.
So I don't think the coffee table is going to be like a little domino
on
its
side.
Boop.
Yeah.
It's not going to do that.
And right across the hallway, less than 6 feet away, the dining room table was completely pristine. There were Valentine's Day cards that were given to him by his daughters that were standing up, that were still standing.
Oh my God. Fuck this guy.
Fuck this guy.
Fuck this man. Oh my God.
Yep. So this is what the police hypothesizes happened. So they think that what happened was that Jeffrey and Colette had gotten into an argument that escalated very quickly in the bedroom. Jeff has this wooden plank that was in the bedroom that they eventually find was like a piece that had broken off of their bed frame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so he uses that to, he starts hitting her, blood spatter starts going everywhere.
Yeah.
Because what they find in the bedroom is type AB blood spattered all over the walls and in the puddle on the floor. So next you find type A blood, sorry, spattered all around the room and in that large puddle. Next, the investigators find a smaller puddle of type AB blood at the entrance of the room. So if you remember, only Kimberly had type AB blood, the 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. So what they think happened is that as he's hitting Colette with this plank,
the
that
daughter
Kimberly
came in?
Wakes up and walks in and starts screaming, "Daddy, Daddy."
Because
that was Jeff's part of Jeff's testimony, is that he heard his little girl screaming, "Daddy, Daddy."
Oh,
and that as he swings backwards, he hits Kimberly on the side of the head, knocking her out.
How fucking strong was his swing to do that?
And it depressed her skull like about 3 centimeters. So there's that little puddle of A blood or AB blood in the entranceway. So next you have, where am I? Sorry. Okay. So now Colette is passed out, obviously knocked out from being beat. And Jeff is like, shit, what do I do? So he picks up Kimberly and takes her back to her room. And they can tell this happened because there's a trail of type AB blood
going
from the bedroom to her bedroom. And when he gets there, somehow Colette manages to still be alive.
Oh, poor baby. Oh my God.
And goes to her younger daughter's room, into Tristan's room, and tries to protect her. But when Jeff realizes that she's awake, he goes into the room and hits her again on the head, which makes there be like a huge amount of type A blood
Yeah.
On Kristen's bed.
Oh my God.
And so, like I said, Kristen, the little one, she was awake when this is happening. And so the police thinks that this is the pivotal turning moment, because you've got the wife is knocked out, your oldest daughter is knocked out, but your youngest 2-year-old is awake and she's just seeing you knock out her mother.
Which is, like, I can't even imagine how trauma, like, just waking up to that trauma. Yeah. Oh my God.
So now is the pivotal moment where he's like, either I kill everyone and try to pretend that it was a break-in and somebody killed them.
Yeah, like fucking Chris Watts saying, oh, my family disappeared. Yeah, my wife just took the kids. Fuck you, Chris Watts.
Fuck you, Chris Watts. Or I let them live and then I go to jail for the rest of my life.
Captain Doctor is not going to let that ruin his reputation.
Exactly. So this is when Jeff goes into the kitchen, grabs a knife, and decides to make it look like a Manson copycat.
That is just fucking horrific to your own kids, too. Yep.
So he goes back into the room and stabs Kristen in her bed multiple times, takes Colette back to the master bedroom and stabs her multiple times. And then, so as he's stabbing, so this is the kicker.
Ugh.
As he's stabbing her, he puts his pajama shirt on her body and stabs her through the pajama shirt. So later, when they're investigating, they're like,
it would be like, oh,
why do 21 of these stabs match up the exact spot where where Colette is stabbed, but Jeff was not stabbed 21 times and does not match those stab wounds?
Because his shirt interfered with all of his years of training. That was his kryptonite. Blue pajamas. Exactly.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
Yep. So they hypothesize that after this, Jeff walks to the kitchen, back to the kitchen, and underneath the sink, there was a box full of surgical gloves. So he puts on surgical gloves, takes Colette's blood, and writes the word pig.
Oh my God.
Headboard. So clearly this is a very violent scene. So do you want to know how much of Jeff's type B blood was found?
I'm wondering, you know, because this man, his whole family has been slaughtered. He himself was attacked and,
yes,
you know, in basically handcuffed by his pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine his blood would be in places. Yeah, but
like the living room where he said he was stabbed.
Flipped over the coffee table? Yeah. That's going to cut you.
There was no type B blood there. But they did find it, small little splatters at the kitchen sink and the bathroom sink.
I wonder what he could have been doing at those sinks, Julie. What could he have been doing?
Self-inflicting some shallow wounds that look like he was attacked, perhaps?
Wow. What a coinkydink.
What a coinkydink. Because then also, a discarded pair of surgical gloves with Colette's blood were found in the house. And
does he really think hippies
are
gonna be carrying surgical gloves?
Exactly.
How many hippies in the 70s
carried surgical gloves?
I mean, how many hippie doctors do you think there were? I mean, there were probably a few, but I don't think that they're just gonna be carrying around some blue surgical gloves with their joints. Yeah.
I don't think so. It seems unlikely.
It seems a little iffy to me.
Yeah, so...
A little iffy.
Clearly, the police thought that this seemed iffy, too. Like, the military police. Because at this point, he's still in the military. He's a Green Beret. He's a doctor for the military. So, the hearings, like, to bring charges forth on him had to be conducted by the military. And so, they have... this hearing called an Article 32 hearing.
I feel like I've heard of that.
Yeah. So this is basically when it's a preliminary hearing to determine if there's enough evidence to pursue a case.
Oh, so like,
yeah.
Basically, so, like grand jury sort of thing, but for
right,
military.
Right, exactly. So it's just basically like the military version of a civilian grand jury.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So on July 7th, 1970, the Article II hearing started. And, you know, obviously they gave the testimony that there was like no evidence of anybody coming in from the outside, that the, you know, that the dining room was like in pristine shape. They gave all of the evidence about the blood and even despite all of this, the defense had a pretty good like tactic up their sleeve.
But my mom and I, and my sister, we like watching A Crime to Remember and Vanity Fair Confidential. And I don't remember which of the two shows it was. I think it was A Crime to Remember. And I think it was the candy episode. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, when you're in court, it's just two people telling a story and you just figure which story is better. Exactly. And
It's just all a show. And that's exactly like what happened here, because the lawyer that Jeffrey McDonald got was a civilian lawyer rather than a military lawyer. And that's because he pretty much knew that he had to have a lawyer that gave a pretty good story, and pretty much get him off on some sort of technicality and showmanship.
Yeah.
Because the evidence was just not there. Because
then it doesn't become about, it's more of like, it has nothing to do with
science. What actually
science
happened.
Or the fact that you slaughtered your entire family. Yeah.
So the defense's main like strategy was that the military police did not secure the scene properly. So dumb shit like that.
That's actually what I just read about in my CSI class. The first thing you do. One of the first things you do is secure the scene.
Exactly. But they didn't do that, because the first mistake that they made is that, so the photographer that they brought in to take pictures of the scene ended up getting like, he was so disturbed that he ended up like vomiting and getting sick. And so he couldn't finish taking the pictures. He had only taken some. And it took like a bit of time to get a second photographer, and by the time the second photographer came around, the two sets of photos showed some inconsistencies, like things had been moved, like there was like a knocked over flower pot that
like the
was,
70s
like,
too like people it. I don't think they were very, it's not like today where everybody is under the understanding of do not touch anything.
Like one guy sat on the couch. They moved articles of clothing around. They moved the placement of the phone that was used, like a bunch of stuff. So pretty much they were like, how can we trust that the military is actually presenting a fair case against Jeffrey McDonald when they didn't even secure the scene? So this pretty much was enough. Because after about 5 weeks of hearings, McDonald was cleared of all charges by the army, citing insufficient evidence.
Once again, we are disappointed.
But that is not where it ends. Because as you can imagine, there was still lots of public scrutiny against McDonald.
So I guess the military had jurisdiction over the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Because he was, so like that was one of the parts that was like maybe went into the motive during the turning point, is that if he did let his daughter live, he would be stripped of his medical license, he would be dishonorably discharged from the Green Berets and the army, and so he didn't want to lose all that. So pretty much, but because they cleared him of everything, this was still considered a military case. So after all this is, or while all of this is happening, Colette's stepfather, Freddie Kassab, and Mildred, Colette's mother, they were both like very much on his side. They were like,
no.
They loved him. They've known him since, yeah. They've known him since he was 13 because they were like in middle school together. So during the trial, during the hearing, Freddie Kassab.
Were they character witnesses?
Yes. Fuck. They testified in front of the Article 32, and he said that if I had another daughter, I'd still want the same son-in-law. And he said that no motive because Jeffrey was the most dedicated and loving man to his family.
No.
And they even went on TV to advocate for their son-in-law.
Yep. Because I firmly believe that you don't really know anybody. You know why? Exactly. Because I found out that I once worked with someone that was a neo-Nazi.
Oh, good job.
Never know who anybody is. You never know.
You don't. Freddie did not.
I was not friends with this person. It was like cordial. And then after this person got fired, then I was told. And I was like,
right. But you're talking about somebody who knew this kid since he was 13. And now he's like 26. And you've never.
Because they probably still think of him as that like 13-year-old kid. Like,
but it's just not even that. It's like you don't know what happens behind the closed doors of a marriage. Like, even exactly. If it's all seemingly like okay, you just don't know.
Exactly.
But Freddie Kassab was very convinced that it was not him. And he started to write letters to congressmen and senators to push for the capture of the hippie murderers and a reinvestigation of the murders because he did not think that the military conducted a competent investigation the first time around. So they ended up going on TV like to advocate for this, and they had Jeff like come on and say, you know, like, we want to see a reinvestigation of these murders. And you just see on Jeff's face, he's like shitting himself.
Good.
He obviously doesn't want this to happen. But it ends up happening. They reopen the case, and pretty much like they start back going through the transcripts, going through reinvestigating everything. Fucking Helena Stokely comes up again. Like, maybe she did it. She fucking confessed when she was booked on a drug charge. But then when they asked her for a formal confession, she was like, JK, I didn't do it. I lied. And she just kept confessing and unconfessing over and over. But pretty much it was like, you definitely know homegirl was not there. She was just on hella drugs. She was on mescaline and heroin. She was just on hella shit. And she probably just convinced herself that she did it. And actually it comes out later that Prince Beasley, the detective, that night that he staked out her house before, like right after the murders happened, he told her a bunch of information that hadn't been released to the public. And that's how she knew so many details. So homegirl was
that
not there.
Is
like the documentary.
That is not what a police officer should do.
Yeah, the docuseries definitely like tries to play on like, did she do it or was it, you know, like, was there actually a break-in or was it just him? And it's just like, no, there was no break-in. Like, it was a red herring.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell. Like, all of the evidence
points back to Jeffrey. It's just to get people thinking there's a new Manson cult.
Exactly.
And they're going to be far more focused on trying to find out who these crazy cult people are because they don't want to have another, like, horrific... I mean, this was a horrific murder, but they're like, we don't want another murder to happen. So let's focus on finding these people rather than investigating the spouse.
Yep. So I'm not even gonna go on further with the Helena Stokely angle because it literally just seems ridiculous to me. Even though she kept coming, like popping back up throughout the years that this case was happening, it just was like at the end, they they realized that it was just all pretty much, she was like pressured into saying all this stuff. So, and you'll see that by the end. I mean, if you're not already convinced that Jeffrey did it,
yeah,
you know, by the end you will be. So, once they started the reinvestigation, Jeffrey McDonald went on a late night show called The Dick Cavett Show.
They did not put this man on television.
They sure did. And let me tell you the worst part. Throughout this entire interview, he was smiling. Is it smiling. On YouTube? Yes. And it's in the documentary. The footage is on the documentary.
To watch it. I mean, I don't want to watch it, but I want to watch it.
It's so eerie. He was smiling, laughing, making jokes, trying to be charming. He made the entire interview about himself. And when they asked him about, you know, like the murders, he pretty much talked about the murders as if it wasn't his family, as if they were somebody else's family.
Oh, like it's somebody else. I think somebody got stabbed.
Yeah, like just kept saying like somebody, and like definitely trying to put distance between himself and the family as if it weren't like his kids. His
yeah, wife, like you had pregnant with his two baby. Daughters, 5 and 2, who probably worshipped you, gave you Valentine's Day cards. And then you turn around, your 2-year-old daughter is literally trying to stop you from stabbing her to death.
Yeah, it's really fucking sad. So this is where everything fucking changes for this case, because Freddie Kassab, who initially had been such a big advocate for Jeff, saw this interview and was like, oh, fuck that.
Oh, good. Round of applause.
And he switched just like that.
Good.
So Kassab began to fight for copies of the hearing transcript because it was secret, because it was a military like, hearing. Yeah. But he was finally able to get a copy of it because he would just like had raised so much hell about it. And he started doing his own investigation.
Oh!
So Colette's brother said that as soon as he got the transcripts, he made like a makeshift workstation at the family dining room and just spent every single night there going line by line over every piece of Jeff's testimony of what happened that night. And he began to poke holes in every single bit of Jeff's story.
Come so after this man.
He began to call the army investigators and they started to exchange knowledge. Like they started to ask questions and like they would ask each other questions and, you know, come up with theories. And he eventually like was brought on to help investigators with their walkthroughs and recreations of the crime. And, you know, that's when they found that all of the murder weapons. Yes. All of the murder weapons came from inside the house. They found that the piece of wood that was used actually matched a piece of the headboard. They also found out that he didn't even turn on the lights when he went to check on his kids. Like, because the lights were found turned off.
Oh.
So,
That's actually one of the things that I literally had to write my discussion board about.
Yeah.
And it was like the first officer arriving onto the scene, there's things that you want to know. You want to know indicators of time, like if there's plates of food, if there's dishes in the sink, like if it's clean, like somebody's been there. You want to see what doors are open, unlocked, if there's lights on, if there's lights off. What rooms are those?
Exactly. So the lights in the kids' rooms were off. So that means when he went to go check on his kids, he didn't bother to turn on the lights to see his kids if they were okay.
I mean,
what else do they find?
Stab them in the dark?
Yeah.
Because,
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, he
I don't know, like flipping the lights on would force him to see what he had done.
They think that if he were actually checking on his kids, he would have turned on the lights.
Oh, yeah.
He also claimed to have given them mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, but the kids were laying on their side, not on their back. They also found out that he was having an affair. Yeah.
This is like
the internet.
Chris Watts, 1970s.
Hello. Oh no.
Oh hello. You're frozen.
La da da.
Please don't freeze on me.
Online, waiting for Catherine to come back.
I'm waiting.
Are you back
for Julie to unfreeze? We're back. Oh my god, Mom, we're both singing.
I love that.
We have to keep that in there though.
Yeah, we have to keep that in there just so that they can see who, that we are literally these people. Yes. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So he was having an affair.
Yes, yes, the affair. And I was like, Chris Watts, 1970s.
Yes, exactly. It didn't seem like it was like an emotionally involved affair, but it seemed like he was sleeping with multiple women outside of the marriage. Mm. At this point, Jeff kind of realizes that Freddie's looking into the transcripts. And Jeff lies to Freddie saying that, oh, him and a group of his old Green Beret buddies started like going out searching for the hippies out in out around Fayetteville, and that he found one of them and that he took care of it, and in the process of fighting this guy he broke his arm.
Okay, so you are a man accused of very poorly planning out the murder of your wife and your two kids. You were just put on trial for murder, and now you're going to go and possibly attempt to murder more people?
Yes.
Is that what I'm getting at here?
That is exactly what you're getting at. But the worst part is this. The worst part is that the lie, that it was just such a lie. None of this ever happened at all, because the military at this point had 24-hour surveillance on him.
Okay, good. Good.
So
good.
They were like, good. Nah. And also at this point, Colette's mom realizes she fucked up.
Oh, that's gotta hurt, though. That's really gotta hurt.
Yeah, it was really hard, like, at this point in the documentary, like, seeing her realize that she fucked up. Because I guess Colette's mom only tried to see the lighthearted stuff. Like, she didn't ever... Like, it was just, like, one of those things where you just try to believe. You try to ignore all the bad things. She was one of
those. Oh, yeah, no, that's a coping mechanism. Yeah. Like, for me, if I have devastating news, I won't cry right away because I'm, like, in the shock of processing. Mm-hmm. But then there's, like, other types where your defense mechanism is to just completely
just ignore it.
Shut down.
Yep.
And so you do things like that.
Exactly. So... Colette's mom at this point realizes that Colette had actually asked her mom if she could come and stay with her and the kids earlier in February, right before she was killed. But her mom like didn't pick up on the fact that something must be wrong.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, sorry, it's not a good time.
I mean, so she Colette must have, go. There's, exactly. like, she must have blamed herself.
Oh, yeah. I was after, so she's,
or, like, take Mildred it, like, says, felt responsible.
Yeah, Mildred says that after this point, like, she vowed that she would take him down.
Yes.
And then they began to both publicly speak out about Jeff being guilty and having done it. And so Jeff felt really personally victimized by this. So he was like,
poor Jeff.
I know. He was like, I'm going to break Jeff. Ties with my family. I'm going to move to Southern California and start a new life. So when he gets there in March of 1973.
Funny how he moves to California, home of the Mansons.
Yeah. Ironic. So when he
Isn't
gets
it
there.
Isn't it ironic?
He joins the emergency department of this very prominent hospital and actually becomes the department chief. And buys himself a luxury waterfront condo.
Wow.
And a 40-foot yacht.
So there's, I mean, because it was military, there's no way this hospital could have known.
Right.
That he had been charged.
Right. How? It was also the 70s. Like, people didn't.
That's true. Like, that's no yeah, way. Yeah. That's what I'm also considering. Because newspapers, like, crimes are really only going to be local.
Yeah.
So
yeah, pretty much he did not give the aura of being a grief-stricken man.
Yeah, this is more of like midlife crisis, American Beauty, but instead of trying to fuck your daughter's friend, you buy a yacht after committing homicide. Triple homicide at that.
Triple homicide. Quadruple if you count
the unborn. Baby. Yes, yes.
Yes, but you know. Anyway. So after this, Freddy is just like going ham, trying to get his case reopened. He goes before a federal judge and demands that a civilian retrial is done against Jeff.
Yes.
And he succeeds because in 1979, the case is reopened and Jeff is charged with 3 counts of premeditated murder.
Yeah. So this is like roughly 9-10 years after.
Yeah. Like 9 or 10 years after. So this is where they bring out all the big guns. Okay.
Oof, they bring out the blue
pajama top as one of the main pieces of evidence. Because remember, he said he had, like, it been pulled over his head and that he had been stabbed through it when he was, you know, fighting off the intruders. So
his kryptonite.
They get, like, a similar shirt and do a demo of a struggle in the courtroom with, like, one of the prosecutors, like, trying to attack the other, like, prosecutor on the case.
Yeah.
With a knife. No, with a real knife.
Oh! Oh, this is the 70s. So yeah,
it's the 70s. Shit like this was allowed. So one lawyer was accidentally like cut on the wrist, which Jeff did not have any defensive cuts to his wrists or hands.
I think the prosecution has made their point.
And that whenever the shirt was stabbed through in a moving struggle like that, all of the holes in the shirt like slashed downwards.
Yeah.
Like they ripped.
But his were probably straight on.
Yep, straight on holes. Because that's when they put the pajama shirt and match up the stab holes to the stabs on Colette's body.
Get him.
They also found the threads of his pajama shirt under the bedding in Kimberly's bed from when he put her back on the bed. They found more threads and splinters from the club that was used in Kristen's room and a bloody footprint that matched his leaving Kristen's bedroom.
I don't think an unconscious man
would
make bloody footprints.
Yep. So pretty much the prosecution's story was that it was an argument that went too far. And once it went too far, Jeff didn't want to lose his medical license, be dishonorably discharged, etc. But the defense played really heavily on Helena being the one that did it. So they brought her on as a critical witness.
Of course.
But she gets up on the fucking stand.
Well, what does she do?
And she's like, I was really high on mescaline, so I don't remember actually being there or having any involvement at all.
That's beautiful.
So the defense is like scrambling, trying to get things back on track. Oh, so they're like, well, she's confessed to multiple people. So they try to bring in as witnesses all the people that she's confessed to.
But she's already proven she's not a credible witness.
Exactly.
And it is the 70s.
Doesn't allow it. That's exactly what the judge says. So he doesn't allow it. And after the, you know, they cross-examine Jeff. They pretty much get him to lose his temper.
Oh, he testified?
Yeah.
Oh, if there's one thing I learned from my law of evidence class. Never take the stand.
Nope.
Never take the stand. Never, 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 never.
Because they wanted to get to him, and they did because he like
and he probably lost liked his the temper. Attention.
He like lost his temper, was just like irritable, and it was just not a good look for him.
Definitely so, not the persona they saw on national TV on that interview.
Yep.
Mm.
So then the trial comes to a close. And you want to know how long the jury deliberated?
Oh, it must have been not
6 hours. 6 hours for a triple homicide case.
Wow, that was my shift today was 6 hours long.
Yep.
That was a breeze.
They came to a unanimous verdict on the first round.
Oh,
of voting.
That's just beautiful.
So beautiful. They go to read the verdict.
Oh, he must have been. I want to say he might have been like really cocky, like I'm going to get away with it again.
So funny that you say that, because I told you his lawyer was like very much a showman and all this stuff. So while the trial was going on, Freddy Kassab went on national television and was like, pretty much implied that if he didn't get convicted, that he would kill him himself. He was like, he's lucky I haven't killed him myself. So the lawyer had Jeff, when he testified and came, stood up, like came into the courtroom that last day for the verdict hearing, mm-hmm. he had him come in wearing a bulletproof vest, thinking that he was gonna get off and that, you know, to show that he was scared. That
I'm scared for my life.
Exactly.
Oh, poor victim.
He thought he was gonna get off.
Oh, that makes it so much sweeter.
Oh, so much sweeter. So they read the first count, which was Colette's murder. They find him not guilty of first degree murder, but guilty of second degree murder.
Okay.
Then they read the charges for Kimberly. Also guilty for second degree murder.
Okay.
And now for Kristen, guilty in the first. Because remember, she was the only one that he pretty much had to make a decision whether he was going to kill her or not.
So did they ever really establish what his motive was?
No.
Oh.
Because he maintains his innocence to this day.
Fuck that.
Yep.
No.
But it didn't fucking matter because the judge was like, okay, let's get him sentenced right away. Literally, good. As soon as they read the verdict, the judge sentenced him and it was like, yeah, you get 3 consecutive life sentences.
Bravo.
So you think it ends there. But they kept trying, like, obviously, they kept trying appeals to fucking appeal.
All that.
They are able to appeal in 2012.
So he spent a good, I'm calculating.
Yeah.
30 years in jail?
Yep. So during this time that he was in jail, during the 1979 trial, the defense team wanted an author to start documenting his defense. They brought on this author who ended up becoming super close with Jeff.
Oh, no.
Became like his best friend and was supposed to be like detailing the story from his side of things. So when Jeff gets sent to jail, they keep in communication by sending like voice recordings to each other.
Oh, yeah, cassette recordings and
author,
stuff.
Yeah, and the author was like, I'm going to get to the truth of this. And Jeff thinks that he's going to write the book that's going to set him free. And you know what he writes?
What did he write?
He writes a book called Fatal Vision that paints Jeffrey McDonald as a narcissistic, cold-blooded killer. Oh. And then it gets turned into a TV movie. So
was this a Lifetime movie?
Yes.
Oh, you know, Lifetime. Yes. I feel like we need a whole separate show of reviewing Lifetime movies that are based on true crimes because they are truly just gems.
So obviously this is like run in the local area, like the TV movie. So the defense says that they're not going to get a fair trial. So when they get the appeal, the hearing for the appeal in 2012, they actually hold the hearing in Wilmington.
Fun fact.
Yes. So they supposedly had like new witness testimonies that all ended up being a lie. Like the guy who said that the guy had said that the original prosecutor had like threatened Helena Stokely into silence, but it turned out it was all fake. And that this guy was just like an attention seeker and just wanted to always be the hero. And that he never actually spent any time with Helena Stokely except to, like, walk her 7 blocks from a parking lot into the courtroom. Oh. So it was all a lie.
Yeah.
So during this appeal, or hearing for the appeal, DNA evidence was available.
Oh, of course, DNA.
And Jeffrey was advanced. Jeffrey came up there and he was like, the government doesn't want to show you all the evidence because they know that it points to it not being me. And he was like,
he's MAGA.
He's MAGA.
He's MAGA. They
found, because he was like, there was bloody brown hair that was found in Colette's hand.
Guess what? And they don't
know who it's from.
Jeff, it was your hair, wasn't it?
So going into this evidentiary hearing, it was that bloody brown hair was tested for DNA.
And what did that DNA say?
It matched Jeffrey.
Boom.
So.
Boom.
The convictions were upheld.
As they should be.
A retrial was denied.
Good.
And Jeff has been living out his life in prison ever since because he is alive.
Oh, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page right now.
And in 2020, at the ripe old age of 77, he applied for compassionate release.
What?
Because his health was, because he had like liver problems, like his liver was failing him, and that put him at a high risk for COVID. So it was incompassionate if they put him through that risk.
But okay.
It was rejected.
Okay, good.
It was rejected. Every time that he applied for parole, it was rejected. And the judge, at one point, one of the judges was like, yeah, you're trying to come out here, but I want you in there.
And that was like his reasoning. I like that judge.
Yeah. So he's alive. He married a woman in 2002.
Oh, who God.
Believed in his innocence. And tried to trick Helena Stokely's mother.
What?
Sign an affidavit on her deathbed saying that Helena confessed to being involved.
That is diabolical.
Yep.
Oh my God, that is diabolical.
And yeah, that's pretty much it. He got justice. We got justice.
Good, we got justice.
Because motherfucker's rotten in jail.
Yeah, like I'm glancing through his Wikipedia page. I don't know what the source is exactly. Hold on. Oh, one of them is a TV interview, and then one of them is from CBS News. Mm-hmm. In 2017, he informed a reporter, if it takes me saying I killed my family to the parole commission to get out of here and go home, I'm never going home.
Yep. Literally maintains his innocence to this day.
Oh.
And just because his ego, he was a narcissist. And if you watch that documentary, you will fucking see that.
Oh, I'm looking at Wilderness of Error commissioned by FX Channel.
It's very good. So it's funny because, so the guy who commissioned the docuseries to be made actually wrote the book called A Wilderness of Error that came out.
Oh, the same guy.
Yeah. So he wrote the book pretty much saying that all the evidence pointed to him, but then like made this docuseries as an attempt of being like, well, actually, maybe he didn't do it.
Oh, almost like the Sons of Sam.
Yeah.
How they're saying that Berkowitz was part of like a larger cult conspiracy. Larger cult,
yeah. And it's just like, no. At the end, he's just like, no.
No, I just did this to toy with you. He's a monster.
Yeah. But he even, like, went on national television to say that maybe his book got it wrong. And he showed up to the evidentiary hearings in 2012 to advocate for Jeff.
What?
It's fucked up, dude. There is so much that goes into this case that I like had to shorten down to try to fit it into this one episode. I thought maybe I would have to do two episodes because this fucking like
Like apparently this guy are Errol Morris, is that his name?
Errol Morris.
Yeah. So, where'd it go? Oh, yeah. Apparently, he had multiple interviews with Ed Gein.
Yeah.
What? Is this man, like, is he trying to be America's devil's advocate?
Yes. And you see that in the fucking documentary. It's irritating.
I don't like that.
No. He's just, like, trying to insert himself into the story so bad.
Like, that's so, it's not about you.
It's not.
It's about the poor mom and the two daughters that were brutally murdered in their home.
Yep.
Like, we love talking about crime and crimes, but when it, like, this is just straight up exploiting.
Yeah.
Like, and how fucking awful must it have been for her, for, like, Colette's mom and her stepdad to see in the news that the person that they thought was on their side is now suddenly flipping sides for shock value?
Yep.
Like, oh.
Yep. And so, like, at least they do, like, at the end, you know, even though Errol Morris the entire time is like, maybe he didn't do it. At the end, they, like, definitely say, you know, they tested the hair in her hand and it matched Jeffrey's. And there's, like, several pieces of evidence that haven't been tested yet. But if they did test them, they would all point to Jeffrey. So at least they do say that at the end. But it was definitely irritating because you see him, like, trying to make this retrial about him.
Oh, that's just...
And it was fucking dumb. But it's still a good documentary besides
that. Like, at least with the Sons of Sam documentary, like, it was telling the story of this man that had done all of this research. And it didn't... It felt more, you know, conspiracy rather than exploitation.
Right.
You know, like, maybe we need to look into this deeper instead of I'm gonna torment the surviving loved ones with this. Like, ew. No.
Yeah.
That's the nice way of putting it.
That is the nice way of putting it. So that's the case. And now it's time for our
ABCs of crime.
Oh,
I asked Cyrus. Cyrus is my sibling. I asked Cyrus if they could commission, like, a little ABCs of crime logo for us, and they're going to do it.
Yay! Oh, Cyrus is so talented.
So talented.
Literally the talent, the art. So artful.
So artful. So
I think our ABCs of crime this week is going to be the letter F for effort.
Like, the F for effort. You did what I said.
Yes, it was excellent, Catherine.
It was. I don't remember where I heard that. I don't know if it was my dad, because my dad is very much like John Mulaney, the bit of John Mulaney, and he's talking about the road trip, and his dad pulls into McDonald's, and they're like, "Yay, we're getting McDonald's!" And he orders one black coffee and drives off. That's very much the vibes that my dad gives off.
Yes,
I want to say I heard it from him, but I don't know. But it's just
F for effort. Because imagine being a fucking MD and not thinking any of this shit through and trying to blame some half-assed.
You're military trained. You should know how to make it look like an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
F for effort. And F for effort on Errol Morris, too, because he tried to exploit the family for clout, pretty much. And he fucking... he fucking sucks because everything points to Jeff. And it's unfair to put, like, the family... Like, they interviewed the brother and, like, her best friends and... like, family members, like, exploiting and bringing all that stuff back to the surface just because you're like, let's mix a little conspiracy into this.
Yeah, no. Let's...
Fuck you. Fuck you, Jeff. Fuck you, Errol. Jeff, I hope you rot in jail for the rest of your life.
And stay there.
And stay there. And yeah, it's a fucking crazy ass story. I'm sorry if it was all over the place. There was just so much information.
That was a lot.
It was like, a lot.
That was a lot to that.
Yeah. I think there were so many parts. I wanted to do it in two parts. Just
but
because
I feel like
the Helena Stokely part.
Yeah.
Like the Helena Stokely part in itself could have been its own episode of how she related to it. But like the more I dug into it, like it just seemed unfair to play into a conspiracy that definitely wasn't real.
Yeah.
And like try to take any of the blame off of Jeffrey McDonald and all of the terrible, brutal things that he did to his family. And
yeah.
Kids,
like even in the Sons of Sam with that conspiracy, like they at least have like findings and connections where you're like, oh, that does make sense.
Yeah.
Instead of just like spinning this wild story that has no basis.
Yeah. So I hope you enjoyed that.
I enjoyed that. That was a trip. My neck
you
is
guys
all
should watch that.
My neck is all broken out.
It is.
From
it's
the,
very red.
Holy shit.
She
it
looks
like
she
sunburned.
Spent the entire day in the sun.
I look like I'm sunburned.
It's
like
because
I'm just pressing my finger into
vampires.
My skin.
It's
and
because
it's just
you're descended
like,
from vampires, Catherine.
I'm descended from vampires.
You are.
Oh. I don't think I ever brought this up, but I found out potentially damning evidence that my grandma is a vampire.
Oh.
I wrote it down on a little sticky note, and I think it got thrown away. She had a man. So the man that married her to her first husband, not so fun fact, her first husband tried to kill her. He was an asshole. So when that marriage ended, the guy that ordained the ceremony mm-hmm. was like, I will give up my religion to be with you. But she said no, because she's like, I'm a person of science. You're a person of faith. I don't want you to give up your faith. Like, and apparently she like would take pictures of people's graves.
Catherine is definitely descended from vampires.
I am descended from vampires.
Yeah.
I feel like my grandma was like the energy vampire, you know?
Yes.
And like stealing the energy of men like a queen.
Yes. We love stealing the energy from men. Hashtag waste his time 2021.
Yes.
Hashtag waste his time all the time. I'm pretty sure I've had that hashtag on here before.
Oh yeah. It's a game. We're consistent. We're consistent with it.
Absolutely.
I just can't believe how fucking
You're
red I
so
am.
So red.
This is like
You
know what they're
like
gonna do? They're gonna have the little. I'm gonna be in like the at the Fort Fisher Aquarium. They have the little area where you can like touch the stingrays and stuff.
Yes,
that's what the aliens are gonna do with
that's
my
exactly.
skin.
You're
gonna have all the
tank.
Little alien children like
just
drawing
touching.
Little designs in my skin. That sounds really fucking creepy. But
mean,
like, they're all gonna want to.
Touch, they're gonna be so
yeah,
enthralled.
I understand
by your color changing abilities.
I don't remember where I was working at, but like one of my coworkers like thought I was having an allergic reaction, and I was like, no, I'm just existing.
I just
like I'm just
me.
Here. This is just me. I'm pink.
I'm pink. I'm red. I am white.
I'm like that's a weird. I don't even know what I'm trying to say with that, but it's weird.
Definitely the most volatile skin of anybody
yeah.
I've ever met.
Honestly, anything will inflame it. Like, if I'm stressed at work, it'll come out. If I'm just existing, it'll come out. Oh, you know what it probably is? The moonshine.
The moonshine.
It's the alcohol.
See, it's a trade-off. Your wrinkles were working extra hard, but you're breaking out. So.
Yep.
It's a give and take, always.
Always. What a fun tangent.
Yeah. And on that note, Catherine, tell the people where they can find us.
Well, if you would like to see more of our spectacular stories and see the photos of these people involved, like Mr. Asshole Captain Doctor here, you can follow us at ms.murder.
_podcast. Catherine has forgotten.
ms.murder_podcast on
and
Instagram.
And look, there she goes, getting red again.
I'm getting more red now. My cheeks are hot. So yeah, you won't see my red face, but you will see photos of this asshole Jeff, and we'll all make fun of him together. Yes. It's a safe space for mocking horrible people.
Yes, it is a safe space for that. Because fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
You get an F, Jeff.
Oh, man.
Well,
what a time.
I guess there's only one thing left to say.
What is that?
Good night, friends.
Good night. Sleep tight.
Da, no. Da, da, da. I hate it.
Yeah, that was actually really creepy.